Merkel Media.
Hey everybody, welcome to Back It Up with Hammer Lane Legends. I am Jack Merkel. Hey, back it up, back it all the way up to episode 47, baby. That's where we're at today. Episode 47, Joyriding with the UP. Oh, whoa, Joyriding with the USPS. I knew I was going to mess it up, read it before. I was like, oh, it's the UPS. No, it's the USPS. Yeah, I'm going crazy. It's this computer, people. I'm just saying, this computer is making me go nuts. Back it up all the way to episode 47, Joyriding with the USPS. Nick joined us. Fantastic episode. Had some crazy stories. And legitimately, like, some of them were crazy. He had some supernatural or paranormal experiences that he wanted to kind of, or ghostly, I'm sorry, ghostly encounters is actually what I wrote here. They were very cool. Nick was one of those guests that just had a lot of stories to tell, basically. The guys loved it. This was Tony and Brian. This was like a year and a half ago now at this point. Anyway, so Joyriding with the USPS. What a bomb show. I hope you guys are doing well. If you've noticed, obviously, if you didn't get to hear the most recent show that we put out on Wednesday, the 18th, I think, 17th, something like that, of May, we have had a lot of technical issues with the computer that I used to produce the show. Thankfully, since you're listening to this and you can hear my beautiful voice, you obviously know that we're at least getting some shows out, and we're trying our best to make sure that we can get them out to you in a timely manner. But the best part about all this is that I know you guys want to listen because we've been asked for shows, so thank you. If you like the shows, you know, feel free to give us a little rating and review on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you end up listening to the show. Podbean, who knows? Go ahead, give us a little rating review, and also feel free to, you know, share the show wherever you got. Thanks, people. Have a good week.
Rise up, gather round, rock this place to the ground. Burn it up and go for broke. Watch tonight go up in smoke. Rock on.
He put it in park, threw open the driver's door, ran out the side of the car, across the front of it, and jumped right off the side of the bridge in front of me.
The only people who really pulled over were truckers.
He said, "We're going Hodge," and he didn't slow down. He went across the median onto the oncoming traffic, but where they could see him coming, they just got out of the way.
I noticed his plane was really low. He went right in front of us, hit the fence, and it spun around. You know, 30 seconds more, he could have hit us.
And I went around that truck, and a guy stepped out from behind the truck and threw a piece of wood, and it shot through my window just like a spear and stuck in the back of the cab of my truck.
That's probably one of the stranger things I've seen.
Welcome to the show, everybody. You're listening to Hammer Lane Legends. I am your host, Tony Merkel.
And I am Brian Merkel.
And we're really glad that you're here. If you have a crazy and wild experience you want to share with us from the road, go ahead and shoot us an email. Our email address is hllpodcast@protonmail.com. That's hllpodcast@protonmail.com. We did change the email because Google sucks. Right, Dad?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, it does. So go ahead and shoot us an email if you want to be on the show and share your stories. We're always down for a good old story. And if you want, go ahead and head over to preparewithhll.com. That's preparewithhll.com for emergency supplies. We offer a ton of stuff over there. Food that lasts up to 25 years on the shelf. We'll knock $100 off for you if you get the 4-week supply. It's a great deal. And we also offer a bunch of other cool stuff in
all
there too.
All kinds of stuff.
Even seeds. Yeah. We offer seeds on the website.
Yep.
It's great stuff. So go ahead and check it out. Preparewithhll.com. And we got a voicemail line.
Right? Awesome, we do.
Yeah, we do. We got some voicemails today, but before we get to those voicemails, I want to let you know, if you want, you can call and leave a voicemail of a short little story you got for us that you don't really want to be on the show for, but you want to share with us. Go ahead and give us a call, 515-585-MERK. That's 515-585-MERK or 6375. And we got ourselves some voicemails today, so let's get to it right now.
Hold on, guys. Calling to tell you a story about how I got my license. I was sent to Memphis, Tennessee, and I went to a school. It was a Time Warner school. Now, when they sent me down there, here's the thing. I was the only white guy there. And luckily enough, after about 3 days, I made me a friend. He's a big old dude. And in that school, they put you in a sleeper cab, and in the sleeper part of it, they had four seats bolted down, and then there would be one driver along with, you know, the instructor. And we was going down the highway, and, you know, luckily the guy that I had made friends with was one driver. And he ended up having trouble getting into seventh gear. Now, mind you, we was going down a three-way interstate, and we was in the middle lane, and it was pouring rain. I don't know if he was nervous about the rain, nervous about shifting. I don't know what it was, but the instructor was trying to help him get it in seventh gear, and he kept telling him, he said, "You need to slow down a little bit, slow down a little bit, slow down a little bit." As he was trying to shift into seventh gear, well, he kept slowing down. He kept telling him to slow down. And I'll tell you this right now, man. That guy jammed on the brakes, and we boated up in the middle of the freaking highway. And we came to a complete dead stop. And when that happened, I'm telling you, I was scared to death. I was sitting there, I was like, "My God, we're going to get hit. Somebody's going to get killed." I started hollering up there. I said, "Listen, can you get that thing in gear? Can you get this thing either going up the road or off the road?" I said, "Because you're going to get somebody killed." And luckily, we finally got this thing going and got going up the road again. And I'll tell you what, man, if he did it again, for some reason, this man could not get it into seventh gear. And he jammed up the brakes again in the middle of the highway. And I'll tell you this, it terrified me. Along with the other guys that were sitting back there, man, we was terrified because this was a busy highway. That's what they chose for us to do, was to get on a busy highway. You know, they called it, you know, real life driving, real life problems, real life highway. So they put us on that road. Man, this guy boated up twice in the highway. And I'm telling you, by the time we finally got back, I was done with the day. I couldn't deal with it anymore, man. My nerves were so freaking racked. It was crazy. And not to count, dude, where we, you know, did our backing training, we was on a old military airport. And the bad part about the trainers was it was all 80% racist. They couldn't stand most of the guys there. And I witnessed it. And I listened to them talk bad about, you know, colored people. But I don't know. That's where I got my license from. I drove for an oil company once for about 4 months after I did all these training classes. Man, we had all kinds of problems there. I seen a couple trucks go off the side of a mountain. One of the mountains that we had to travel took about 45 minutes to get from the bottom to the top. And every day there was about 6 to 8 truck wrecks on this mountain. It was so steep. And not to count, every day there was one or two guys hitting other vehicles. There was one night that we got bowed up at the mouth of the holler that we was pulling in, and it was a guy, I'd seen his truck sitting there. He lived about two houses in, and we had a third party truck coming out. There was about 10 of us trying to come in, and we got held up, and that guy, that third party guy, just for some reason couldn't make it out. And behind me was this guy in a Dodge truck, and he come around me, and he was probably doing about 30 miles an hour. I don't even know how he made it around me and around the guy in front of me to cut into that holler, but he didn't know that there was another truck sitting at the mouth of that holler. And he come around me, man, come around that guy, and when he finally got around the guy in front of me, he noticed that there was another truck there, dude. This guy hit the hillside and pinned it. Man, he bounced off that hill, the back end of his truck hit the guy coming into the holler, and the front end of his truck hit the guy coming out of the holler. And he stopped, and I guess he got his bearings and figured out that he had hit somebody. Well, hit two drivers. And man, he just put his foot to the floor and peeled out of there. And as he peeled out, he ripped down the driver's side of his truck on this third party guy and got in and got out of there. Man, I've seen some crazy wrecks. I've seen some crazy people. But I figured I'd call and let y'all know. And I thought, I think that's, you know, pretty cool story. I think you guys have some really awesome stories on here. Y'all just keep doing what you do, man. Y'all do an awesome job. And I look forward to listening to y'all's podcast every Tuesday. You guys keep it up, man. Y'all are awesome. See ya.
Right on, man. Thanks for calling into the show.
That's, yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. I mean,
I don't know. You know what I wrote down as he was talking? Real life driving, real life highway, real life dying.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't stop in the middle lane on the highway. I don't care if you're in a big truck or not.
Yeah. I was just thinking, like, when he was telling that story, I was thinking, does that even make sense in a car? You know, like, I mean, what makes you think that's a good, like, what goes through the head for that to be the logical conclusion?
Exactly.
And you're trying to become a driver.
Yeah. You just keep rolling. If you're stuck in sixth gear, you just keep rolling and get in the right hand lane. Start taking it over to the side. You don't just stop.
Yeah.
I mean, good Lord.
I don't know. I just think there's a lot of natural logical conclusions you can come to before you get to that point.
Look, I'm going to tell you a really quick story of one of the road drivers where we work.
Yeah.
He was coming across 80, coming back from a relay from Brookville, I think it was. And it got foggy. It's come down Clearfield Mountain. It got real foggy as it got down to the bottom of the road. And he said there was a four-wheeler driving in front of him. And all of a sudden, they disappeared into the fog. And all of a sudden, he changed lanes. And all of a sudden, they had stopped in the right-hand lane.
Oh,
that four-wheeler
gosh.
Had stopped because they couldn't see.
Oh, my gosh.
And if he'd have stayed in that right-hand lane, he'd have nailed them.
Oh,
that's like, the kind of stuff that you look at and you're like, I mean, thank God that he had enough,
wow,
in his, you know, enough common sense to move over in the left-hand lane. Because there was nothing you couldn't see.
Yeah.
You know, it's fog. And they stopped in the right-hand lane on the highway.
That's incredible.
That's the stuff that goes on. That's the crazy stuff that you put up with on the road. And that's why, in a big truck, why would you do that? And what are you doing in the center lane as training?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you even do that? Why would you take your trainees into the center lane? You keep them in the right-hand lane.
That's
I mean, we're taught you're supposed to always be in the right-hand lane unless you're passing, and that's it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe it was one of those things where the middle lane was actually the right hand lane because the far right was actually an exit and they weren't getting off.
That could be.
Yeah.
That could be. But he said it was three lanes.
Yeah.
You know, it was a three lane highway in both directions.
Scary.
So. Yeah, buddy. That's an underwear changing moment.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Wow. All right. That's next up.
Hey, Brian and Tony, the Body Snatcher here.
Oh, yeah.
This is my vision for your podcast in 2021. You guys are so popular, truckers come from near and far wearing no mask, big smiles. They gather at a local bar to see a live recording of Hammer Lane Legends. Maybe a drinking game breaks out. Let's say everyone takes a shot every single time Tony says, and stuff. Ah, I've heard that laugh before. It's Southside Pistol Packin' Mama Susan the Wrecker. That is one tough broad, and I know tough when I see it. I worked in Gary, Indiana for 26 years. Son, my dad would say, Gary is like the armpit of America. I'm thinking further south. Now that's enough predictions for now. Today's story is a bit of fusion, half Hammer Lane and part confessionals. I had a room in my parents' basement. It was part bedroom and part art studio where I did my projects for graphic design school. I wanted to build a new desk or maybe buy one. There was a very interesting desk in my near future. My brother called me one day from the funeral home. I am going to pick you up in the Suburban. They want us to go get a body at O'Hare. Okay. Looks like one of our customers is coming home, a return to sender. In her travels, a forklift operator at LaGuardia dropped her, casket and all, destroying the lid. The best they could, they repaired the lid with Wisconsin chrome, otherwise known as duct tape, and sent it right back to Chicago. We got her back home, made a pot of coffee, popped her up on the table, and started to assess the damage. She was young, but we were going to make her look beautiful again. Her hair was a mess. She was missing an earring. Her nose was broken. The crazy thing was the makeup on her face was all wonky. That must have been some impact. The inside of the lid had a perfect impression or likeness of her face smashed up into the silk liner. Most of her makeup and lipstick and rouge and pancake, even the fake eyelashes, were stuck up in that lid. We boxed her up in a fresh new casket, got her ready to go back to the airport the next morning. My brother and I, we were cleaning up everything, and I start thinking, I can make that casket into a desk. So I did. I threw out the lid. The casket was made of a hard wood. It had moldings and carvings all over it. I built a top, some legs, and voila, a very cool desk. A conversation piece, mind you. This is where we cross over the veil into the confessional. Years earlier, we lived in a different house. My bedroom door had marks and screw holes in the molding, like there were several locks and latches at one time. It was strange. So I would leave my door open. There was a hallway light, and that was comforting. Now, the first time I saw it, I was sleeping in my bed. I woke up a little and turned over, and there it was. I seen it. I got so scared, I flipped over, pulled the covers over my head, and fully expected to be torn limb from limb. I wasn't dreaming. It was a high-pitched whine in my ears. The air around me was full of like tension, fear. The air actually moved choppy waves. Weird, right? I came to that description a few years later when I felt the exact opposite of what I felt that night. My family was involved in a church passion play. We did 18 performances. Our auditorium sat about 4,000 people. There was 300 cast members. We had camels and horses, goats, sheep, you name it. Over the years, I played several different characters. Michael the Archangel, a soldier, a centurion, a thief. But once I gained enough seniority, I got to play Caiaphas, that fat bastard, the head honcho of the sanctimonious Pharisees and Sadducees. I played it like an overweight male version of Hillary Clinton, extremely wicked. I would go in early on the night of the performance, get my costume, my fat suit, glue on the beard, the makeup, the wireless mic. I would go in early so that I could pray before each show. The quietest place I found was the corner of the set where Calvary was. The costume I wore was very ornate, silk, purple. My favorite part of the gear was the prayer shawl, high quality. It had fringes on both ends of it. It was made and blessed in Jerusalem. They said a rabbi would pull the shawl from his shoulders and drape it over his head when he prayed. So I prayed the same way. Ah, remember the old joke, prayer is you talking to God. Schizophrenia is when you hear God talk back. Anyway, I prayed a little, but mostly I just sat there with my head bowed under that prayer shawl. I would hear like awe sound with a pleasant vibration. The air felt thick and content. Everything was separate. Everything was one. My heart was light. And yes, gentlemen, I cried. Back to the scary room where the second time I seen whatever it was. I was determined to face that thing. I was going to drop a nuke. I was going to invoke the name of Jesus Christ. Oh, that's easier said than done. A few weeks go by and nothing. Then one night, trying to get to sleep, I'm looking over, turning over, feels me down the bed. It took over and reaches over. I'm trying to get my glasses. I can see it. Yeah, so I can see it. Part of it was so frightening. It was tall. He was wide, hunched over a little bit. In order to look inside of the room, even stooped over by its forehead was above the door frame. The room was dark. Only a hallway light was behind it. I say dark. This thing was black, like pitch black, darker than my mother-in-law's heart, and I hope she hears this. Despite the fact that death got its bony fingers wrapped around my throat, I had to say Jesus. My mind said with great boldness, Jesus Christ compels you. My mouth, on the other hand, said something that sounded like cheese whiz. It was cheese whiz. I threatened the dark entity with constipation, like trying to launch a missile at something and only hitting it with a spitball. My mind and my mouth finally sync up and decide that that's pretty funny. I pull the blanket over my head like an embarrassed schoolgirl, flip over, face the wall. Once everything calmed down, it was peaceful. I never seen it again. I like to think that it couldn't come in, because right next to the door was an end table and a recliner. And on the table is where I happened to have my Bible. Maybe my Bible was like garlic to a vampire. Maybe he just got butt hurt because I laughed at him. I don't know. He was gone for now. Ahead a few years in a different house, and this house was built in 1889, but it wasn't scary. It was pleasant. One night I'm sleeping next to my newly acquired casket desk. My 100-year-old basement door starts creaking open very slowly. Without opening my eyes, I'm like, son of a bitch, that thing came back. I breathe slowly. I watch the door open. I was nervous, but not too terribly scared. Dark figure steps into the room. Its eyes were fixed on that casket. The figure stretched its hands towards the casket, and it starts speaking. The creature was a lot shorter, much thinner, and was wearing, I'm squinting my eyes because I don't have my glasses, it's wearing a robe. What the hell? This thing isn't a beast or a ghost. In my mind, if it was a ghost, it would wear like an old tiny robe or bath cloth. This robe was like modern. It starts talking louder. Wait, it's praying. I'm like, Mom? Oh, son, I didn't mean to scare you. Oh, what in the world are you doing? You're scaring me to death. I was praying and rebuking the spirits off of that casket. It's so creepy. I don't want it here anymore. So I turned on my light and we both sat down. I explained to her that that was no concern of hers. The ex-resident of this particular casket was a lovely little old man of 96. I think he was a minister. He died quite peacefully in his sleep, surrounded by his children, grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren. God bless. My mom bought that hook, line, and sinker. I kept that desk for years. But once I got married, the casket was gone, speedy quick, almost as fast as the FBI solved the Nashville bomb. All right, boy. That was a little weird. That is half blood, sweat, and gears, and half woo-woo. Love your podcast. God bless.
All right, man.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow. Wow. What do you say?
I don't know. What do you say to that? Yeah. Return to sender.
Oh, man. I wouldn't be a collector. I wouldn't be a collector of the craft. You know what I mean?
No.
I wouldn't have done it. And this guy, he just holds on to it and tells his mom it was absolutely fine. And I'm assuming it disappeared because the wife was like, no.
Yeah, exactly. It's going.
All right, Body Snatcher. Thanks for another great story. Dad, who do we have on the show this week?
Today we are talking to Nick, a USPS driver and many other things. He's worn many hats.
Yeah, he has. This is a good conversation. So let's get to Nick right now. All right, we got Nick on the show. Nick, how you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Doing good, doing good. So we were sitting here chatting about some fun stuff that the audience is not privy to right now.
They will be.
They will be eventually. But
yes, they will.
Tony Merkel has some things coming down the road. Let's just put it that way. Let's put it that way. I'm feeling a little ragey. So
there you go.
Yeah. So Nick, man, you work for the USPS, huh?
Yes, I do.
How's it feel to be in the middle of controversy?
You know, that's the thing, man. A lot of people come up to me and, you know, they ask me, how are you doing with all this going on? Especially last year when we got the new Postmaster General. How are you guys doing with all this? And I go, I'm still delivering the mail.
Exactly.
I'm still delivering it. I'm not one of the higher ups where it really, really affects me. I'm there to do my job and get you guys what you need and go home at the end of the day. That's what I do.
Amen to that.
So, you know, it doesn't really affect me that much, but, I do see it. I do see it. It's not, because during the time that we were having all this controversy with everything, I was supervising at the time and we were getting hit on the back end there with, crunching for money and time and everything. And it was getting pretty rough, but they've laxed up on that pretty much now.
All right. So Nick, as a mail carrier, you tell me your honest to God opinion. What's more efficient, mailing by or voting by mail or developing an app where people vote from?
Well, I mean, I heard a whole bunch of stories about the issues with voting by mail and everything. But again, during the time that we were voting, you know, I was doing spot every other day or every other week. I was doing supervising at offices and we took it very, very seriously. You know, anything that came in after our last truck, I had to drive to a plant 15 miles away. And if I didn't make it there in time, I had to drive all the way down to City of Industry, which is about a 30-minute drive to drop off to make sure that those votes got in. We took it very seriously. We didn't play any games. So I didn't see any issues on our end because we were holding it up on our end here. But I mean, I can't speak for every office and I can't speak for every place in the United States that is a post office or anything like that. But I think that, you know, the idea of having an app to vote makes it accessible to a lot of people. But again, you know, things can be tampered with like that. So, you know, having your actual signature on a vote and doing it that way, I think is probably, you know, one of the greatest ways to do it. I mean, I see that's the thing is they really, really pushed it for us at our offices that were, you know, we have to take these things seriously. And even up until the night of the election, any votes that came in that night, we sent in an express package out to the voting centers that night. They had to be mailed that night if they couldn't make the truck. So that's the only thing that we guaranteed the next day is express mail. So they had to be timestamped, they had to be round dated, and they had to be sent an express package that night. So we handled them very seriously where I'm at.
So so what I'm hearing is that you're a government shill.
Wow. I'm a puppet.
No. Oh, wow. Man. So when you were driving it to the other locations and stuff, those locations were in the same state that you were in, right?
Absolutely.
They weren't going to Michigan.
Not like dropping your trailer off and leaving it. And, you know,
I got pallets of pallets.
And then the next day they were gone.
Yeah.
They were showing up in Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. I like busting balls, man. Thanks for letting me do that. So you do work for the USPS and you have some crazy stories. Now, just give people a 30,000 foot view of what we're going to be doing today is you're going to be sharing some of your crazy experiences working for the USPS outside the election fraud.
And just for the people who don't know, USPS means United States Postal Service. I mean, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's
you
true.
Know, I'm
yeah.
sorry. There's just some people going, oh, he works for UPS.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I know.
Yes. A lot of people just think of the main three as FedEx, UPS, and Amazon.
Yes.
But yet what people neglect to understand is that we deliver for all three of them.
Yes.
And we do our own.
Yes.
We have contracts for UPS, FedEx, and Amazon.
Wow.
So all of our packages that come from FedEx are FedEx relabel. They'll have a FedEx label, but then have our tracking number on it.
Gotcha.
And then anything that comes from UPS is UPS SurePost, which has a UPS label, but our tracking number over it.
Gotcha.
So we deliver for all three of the major delivery companies mm-hmm. on top of our own stuff and the mail.
Yes.
Yeah. So like years ago.
It gets pretty rough.
Yeah,
it does. I can imagine. Holy crap. Yeah. Amazon does a poop load of work.
Years ago, yeah. Nick decided that he didn't look good in brown, and he
didn't. I traded it in for pale blue.
Yeah, there you go.
It's more manly.
So much more attractive. Pale blue is like the sexiest of colors.
Just didn't like being called Buster Brown on the radio.
Oh, man.
Holy crap.
All right. Well,
anyways,
let me finish my 30,000 foot view here. So you work for the USPS. You got some stories for there. And then we're going to talk about the cement company you worked at. And that gets a little paranormally. So we're always down for that. And then we're going to also talk about your experiences building cranes and driving flatbeds, right?
Yes.
All right, man. So
that's going to be a fun conversation.
Yeah, for sure. So let's start off with the USPS, man. Tell us some of these crazy experiences, man.
Okay, so I've been at the USPS for about 5 years. And during that time, I've had some really wonderful experiences between going from other offices, actually going up north to San Francisco and even Santa Rosa the following year. And delivering mail up there, it's a completely different entity up there compared to where I'm at here. And then I've had the experience of supervising as well. So, but to get into some of my carrying stories, actually here, where I live here, there's this one time, man, that I had this route, and it's in a really nice city, small city, It was the route that had the quote unquote ghetto on it. And, it's just two streets that were lower income, but there was this one house on the street, and it was a drug house. And, there was this lady that I would always hang around, and there was a church down the street, and she would sleep there at night, but her physical address was that house. And she was a very, very nice lady when she wasn't, on drugs. And this one time I'm making a delivery and I get back into my truck and she rounds the corner and she opens my door and like physically opens my sliding door and is in my face. And she looks at me and I'll never forget this. She looks at me and she goes, "You're going to have to drop the effing bombs, man." And I go, "What?" And she goes, "Yeah, you work for the government, right?" And I go, "Yeah." And she goes, "Yeah, you're going to have to drop the effing bombs. You're a puppet. You're going to have to do it." And I go, "What are you talking about?" And she goes, when this world goes to the bad, you're not going to have a choice. You signed a contract." And I go, I just deliver your mail, man. Like I'm not trying to, you know, drop any bombs on anyone."
And wow.
And then this is where it got really weird. She put her hand on my shoulder. I'm frozen at this point because I don't know what to do. She's kind of wedged herself inside of my truck. And she puts her hand on my shoulder. And I know this is really bad, but I have to say it because it actually happened. She goes, "Dear Lord, please help shove it up this young man's ass." And that is when I took off.
Wow. Oh, man. You know what? When you first said this is where it gets really weird, I'm thinking it gets weirder. Some strange person comes up and they wedge themselves in your door and start talking to you. And and then she's talking about dropping bombs. And then it gets weirder from that point. It's like, wow. I was like, where is this going to go?
And then it gets even more weirder.
Oh, boy.
So, oh, wow.
So I take off, and then she goes down this alleyway, and I have to go through that alleyway to make a delivery about 5 minutes later. And she's in the alleyway, inside of a trash can with her heels up in the air, just digging for stuff in an empty trash can. I stop because she's in the middle of the alleyway. She gets out, and then she starts screaming at a Ford Focus with nobody inside of it.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then around during that time, the kids were getting out of school. There was an elementary school down the street. So I actually delivered to the police department there, and they know me. And so I called and I said, "Hey, it's Nick." And they go, "Hey, what's going on, Nick? What's going on?" And I go, "You guys know Lisa?" And they go, "Yeah, where is she at?" And so they came and picked her up, and nothing I told them, "I just don't want kids to get hurt, you know."
Oh my word! Yeah, nothing like being on a first name basis with the police.
Oh yeah, they're really cool where I'm at too, man. They're really cool people.
You let her around the kids, and then she's like, "They're all demons. Exactly. They're all
who
demons.
Knows what she'll do?
Where's my sword? I need to start slashing the demons. Thus saith the Lord."
Oh man, yeah, that's one of the craziest things that happened to me on my route down here. But when I went up to San Francisco, and let me tell you, that was an experience. They put us up in a hotel. They paid us per diem. Gave us rental cars. They did the whole nine for us because we were there for about 2 months.
Wow.
To carry mail. And a lot of people don't understand, in San Francisco, the, what's considered to be poor is, $180,000 or less. Wow. So if you don't make 180 grand a year, you're not making it, because the average rent for a studio apartment when I had looked up there was about $2,800 a month.
Wow.
And then a 5-bedroom home was about $6,000 a month to rent. But it's been taken over by the major tech giants. like Apple and Google and Lyft and Uber and all these major companies, these people who bought their homes in the 60s and 70s for, you know, $80,000 are selling them for $3 million. And these companies are buying them and sectioning them off into apartments and hiring employees to live there, and they shuttle them to their compounds. So when I was up there, one of the carriers I was with, his cousin lived there, and she said the traffic has nearly tripled in the past 2.5 years because of that. So, but yeah, that whole place is nuts. We had mail carriers who were driving Teslas but living in them.
What?
In the parking lot. Wow. Yeah, they would live and they would go to the gym and shower, and they would live in their cars at night because they couldn't afford rent.
Tesla's cheaper than rent. That's insane.
That is insane.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when you go in the parking lot and all you see are, you know, Audis and Teslas and Mercedes and everything like that, and then you realize at the end of the night these people are going in there, and you look in the back and there's blankets and pillows, you realize that rent is no joke up there. But to get into some of my experiences up there, the homeless is a really big issue. And on my route, I was just south of the Golden Gate Bridge. It was about a 5-minute drive from where I was. And we had the homes that were set up there are really close together. It looks, when you look up the street, it looks like a giant wall with windows that just goes the whole entire block. But the homeless were really, really big issues. And so I was delivering up there, and I had, God, I had at least 25 keys on my keys for the gates and everything up there. And this homeless lady, well, first I didn't know she was homeless, but I'm walking up, I'm looking at my mail, and then I hear, "Hey, you're the key master." And I go, "What?" And I look up, and there's this lady, and she's wearing pajamas, but they are urine soaked. And so I go, "Yeah," I just kind of sidestep, and she goes, and I go to my next house, and she goes, "Oh, you're not going to unlock my door?" And I go, "No, I can't. That's a private residence. I only have keys to these for apartments here." And she goes, "That's fine. I'll let my lawyer know." And I was kind of ticked off by her comment. So I said, "You go ahead and do that." And I continued on about my day. The next day was Saturday, so I had to work. And so I'm coming up the street, same street, because it's the same route. And I smell bleach, like really strong bleach. And there's this lady, and she's wiping down her doors and everything. And I go, and I hand her her mail, and I go, she goes, "Did you see a homeless lady around here?" And I go, "Well, I see a lot of homeless people." And she goes, "Yeah, but she defecated all over our entryway and rubbed it in our keyholes, in our mail slot, on our windows, everything." And she goes, "You don't know anything about that?" And I go, "Nope." And I went upon my way.
Wow.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I never saw her again after that. So,
oh my word.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. And then having people, you know, you're walking down the street and you're literally watching someone go to the restroom in a corner. That to me was kind of a culture shock. I mean, because you don't normally see that. And to watch someone to your left and to your right across the street just going wherever they want, that was kind of like, whoa. Wait a minute. You know, I guess that's pretty gross to me. I don't know about you guys.
No, I'm with you. You know, I mean, around here, you know, in my backyard, I don't know if you ever, you know, I have an outhouse. Like, that's about as far going outside as I'm going.
Ding, 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 ding.
Hold on, let me go get my banjo, yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm rural. But I mean, you know, I don't know. Is this what a sophisticated society is? You know, we just let people go wherever they want. That's what we're doing now. That's the new thing. You know,
I mean, I have no idea. But running into people like that up there, like I had a guy. The garages are kind of deep set up there, and just it was kind of funny. But he looked at me and he goes, "Hey, you're Chevy Chase." And I look nothing like Chevy Chase. And so it's just like the mentality of people up there is just very, very strange. And I wasn't used to it. So it was kind of like, you know, it just being transplanted like that was right. a really big wake up to see people live like that. And it wasn't really bad where I was at. I mean, I know places that were really a lot worse, mm-hmm. But yeah, no, that was pretty crazy. But if you guys want me to get into some of my supervising stories, I can do that too.
Oh yeah.
I got absolutely. A couple of those.
Yeah. Go for it.
I can't name the office that I was at.
That's all right.
But, it's funny. I have carrier stories about other carriers, and I have employee stories about other employees. I got two at this office, about one about a truck and the other guy about our dock clerk. So I had first started at this office in, December of 2019, actually the day after Christmas. And I had just come back from, Santa Rosa carrying up there and for a week for Christmas to help out. And they started, and, one of the other supervisors that was there, he was originally from my other office. So we knew each other, and it was kind of like a ease into the office, 'cause I had never been there before. And so, you know, everyone was talking about this one guy and how he's been there forever. No one can touch him and everything. And I'm like, okay, you know, whatever. And then I come to find out it's the dock clerk. And so he never shows up on time. He's always taking smoke breaks. He's always, you know, doing his thing. And this one time I was sitting at my desk, and it was still the time where the packages were heavy, so carriers were out late. And this guy comes up to me, and, you know, he introduces himself, and I smell like a really sour smell on him. And come to find out, you know, you put two and two together, it's alcohol. And this guy, the other supervisor that I was there with, he had been there already for a month and a half, 2 months. So he had already been introduced to everybody at the office. I was there for maybe about 3 days. And he looks at the other supervisor and he goes, "Hey, your name's John, right? Because you're from transportation, right?" And the guy goes, "What?" He looks at me and he goes, "What?" And I go, "What?" And he goes, "No, my name's Ronnie." And he goes, "No, you're from transportation, right?" And this guy is stumbling around, just bumping into everything. And he lets out the biggest fart ever. And I look at the other guy, and we're tilting our heads, looking at each other. And we go, "Did that really just happen?" and you know, we could never nail him for it, because we could never do it. But yeah, that guy was a trip, man. He was always getting injured. He'd come in and, "Oh, I hit my balls on something." And I go, "How'd you do that?" He goes, "I dropped the tub and I hit my balls." And I go, "You gotta be more careful, man. You're getting injured all the time." And yeah, man, that was a trip. But the biggest thing that was happening at this office was the customer. So I had a customer come in one time. And we had a bell system. So if one bell meant they needed another clerk up at the window, two meant that they needed a supervisor. And so, you know, I'm sitting in the back doing some computer work, hanging out, and I hear two bells. And so I'm finishing my stuff real quick, and then they just keep going off with the bell. It's just going off like crazy. And so I get up there, and there's this really tiny guy at the counter. And he looks at me and he goes, your window clerk is being rude." And I go, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. Talk to me. Tell me what happened." He goes, "I didn't have my address on this label. And she told me to get out of line. And she started to call other customers. And then when I was done, I tried to get back in line. And she said I could wait at the back." And he goes, "She's being very rude and inconsiderate. I almost had to use my black belt on her. And this guy wants to get into me. And I almost had to kung fu chop him in the neck." And I go, "Whoa, wait, like, what are you talking about?" And he's like, and then he starts doing his karate moves in front of me at the window. And I'm like, "Okay, dude, you've got to go." And he's like, I'm going to chop this guy in the neck. And this guy gets in front of him. And he was like, "You ain't going to do shit to me." And I really had to, like, I didn't know how to dissolve the situation because this little tiny guy was about to get wrecked by this average guy who wasn't playing any games with him. And I told him, I was like, you got to go. And the guy in front of me grabbed him by the shirt. And this guy is holding his arms out, doing chops in the air. And, like a little kid word. When you would pick him up by the shirt and he's two chops in the air. And he like pushes him outside and this guy is just going, hey, oh man, there's stories, you know, and it's not just me. You talk to any delivery person then, and they always have stories upon stories. And it's a never ending thing because every day is a different day, you know?
It sounds like a freaking Jerry Springer meets Postal Service.
<It does. laughs> Dude, that's not even the half of it though. Like, I mean, I've heard stories about people getting robbed and, you know, put in storage containers for hours. Jeez. And they're banging on the storage container. Yeah. And it happened at that office I was at about 5 years prior. They got robbed and were put in a storage container for about 3 hours until someone came and let them out.
Easy money. Easy money right there. Hey, I couldn't do anything, boss. You know, I was locked up.
What are you going to do? Fire me?
Yeah.
When it starts happening once a week. To the same guy, you know. Yeah. It's time to look into it.
Exactly.
It's time for cameras.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
I can't imagine that though.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy, intense, fast paced place to work. You know, it'd be different if we were just delivering packages, but man, delivering mail on top of that and having, you know, my old route had about 720 stops every single day. And then, you know, my new one's got about 530, but still, I mean, it's no joke. This place is no joke. But if you guys want me to get into the stories about this, when I was a security driver for that cement company,
that's where
it gets really interesting because, you know, I always contemplated with myself for years because this happened when I was 20. So I'm 25 now. This was right before I started working for the post office. But, you know, I've always contemplated for years if I actually experienced this. But the more I think about it, the more it validates it for me because I never thought I had told this story to people. So I kind of thought maybe it was a dream or whatever, but my brother validated it for me just a couple of weeks ago. I had mentioned, I said, hey, I think I saw this thing one time. And he goes, yeah, I remember you telling me about that. So, I was 20 and I just started working for this cement company out here. And it's a fairly decent cement-sized cement company. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Robertson's Cement Mix.
I don't think so.
They're very, very popular out here in Southern California, but it's not that one. It's their competing company. And my job was to drive this tiny little Chevy Sonic at night for security. Because they had the biggest issue with cement companies and rock companies was along their conveyor belts is copper wire. And so people would drive in, hook up something to their tailgate or their towing hitch, and then just rip off the copper wire and then sell it. Well, I mean, one time that happened, it was like about 100 yards of copper wire. This pickup truck just kept driving and took it off.
Wow.
And you know, it shut down operations for about 3 days. So it pays to have a security guard drive around, you know, and check. So my route was actually about 300 miles a night. I would drive, you know, from where I was at to San Bernardino, all the way down to Temecula, back over to Chino. It was just a constant loop. I made like three trips a night, so it was about 300 miles. We started about 7 o'clock at night and got off about 6:30 in the morning. So I was I was always told by, you know, ever since I started there, you know, you got your guys who would tell you, oh, you know, you hear voices here. Oh, you know, there's ghosts here and blah, 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 you know, because you're driving at night and they try to freak you out, you know. But come to find out a couple of the plants where they said it was actually a homeless camp and down an embankment on the other side. So that's where, you know, a lot of the lore came from, was where you heard voices. Well, it was a homeless camp that was down there and they were making a bunch of noise and stuff. But yeah, no, there's one plant in San Bernardino, and one of the stories is that you would see a lady in white not dance, but float behind the cement mixers that were out there. And I never saw that. But the one thing that I experienced that nobody told me about, there was like a building that was like an L shape, and in the corner there was a mailbox that we had to pick up. I know it's funny. I worked for the post office and I was still picking stuff up out of mailboxes back then. But that's where all the batch paperwork was, where all the money orders and everything was for the day for all the jobs. So we had to pick that up and bring it back to the home plant for processing and the filing and everything. And every time I would go into this corner where this mailbox was, it felt like there was about 3 or 4 conversations going on at every angle. So it was constant, like low murmuring and whispering everywhere around me in that one corner. And I could never, it always made me really, really, really uneasy. I didn't want to get out of the car there. I didn't want to go pick up that stuff. It just gave me a really, really bad vibe. And you know, I never could explain that. I walk out of that area and stand kind of on the other side of the building, and I could never hear anything. But right in that corner, it just felt like there was 5 people talking at once. It was really, really strange. But that's not the main story of what I experienced. So the main one is at the main plant where I was at, and it was a Sunday. And on Sundays, nobody works. The powder train drivers don't work. The cement mixers don't work. The dump trucks don't work. Nobody works. Not even the mechanics are working in the shop. Sundays are the only day that everything's closed. And I have a key to the gate at the top and the bottom. And I would come at the top and I would lock the gate behind me, and the one at the bottom would be locked, and I would leave through that gate. There was nobody in there. And I was driving around, making my rounds. I'd go through all the mixers to make sure nobody's messing in them or anything like that. And when I made a U-turn, there was it's really dusty, especially if the water trucks hadn't been working on Saturday, or if they didn't wet the grounds or anything like that. It was very, very dusty and a lot of dirt was in the air. But when I made my U-turn to go back up to check where the asphalt plant was, I saw 2 figures standing next to where we had our personal or a company gas tank, where a company would come in and fill for all the truck drivers so that they could fill their own gas tanks there. And they were standing side by side. One was taller than the other. And one looked like an older man, but the other one was a definite child. I could definitely tell that it was a young kid. And they were standing right next to the gas pump. And I literally drove, as my headlights went, because I could see them to my left, and as my headlights went through them, they disappeared immediately. And so I'm like, okay, am I really tired? It's only 9:30. I just started an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. I was like, did I just see that? And so I get on the radio and I talk to, there's another security driver that does the LA portion of their plant. And I call him and I go, hey dude, like I think I'm tripping out. Like, I think I just saw something. And he goes, I've never seen anything like that, but I've heard stories of people seeing things over there. And I said, but no one, you know, I said, I know you guys tried to scare me when I first started here and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, yeah, but I've never seen anything over there. And he says, I've only heard a few people say things. So After that, I did a little bit of research, and that was that area where we were at was a, like they used to back in like the 1800s, they used to mine there. They used to, it was like a rock mining thing. And we're still doing that to this day, but we're just using it for cement. But that was where they were looking for, apparently looking for gold. It wasn't a very successful area to look. But it was one of the areas to look for gold. There was a riverbed there that ran straight through. We still have where the mountains come down to an angle where the dam is at. If you look on a map, a satellite image, it would come straight down to where I was at. So I could never really explain that. I always battled with myself over the years of thinking, did I really, really see that? Or, you know, was I just really tired? But my brother confirmed it for me that I had talked. I thought I had never told anybody that story, because other than the guy I had been working with, and I never thought I had. But my brother told me, yeah, I remember you telling me about that. So it kind of validated for me that I had told someone about it, that I didn't just make it up in my head. Yeah, that was pretty creepy. That's one of the only things that I've seen that's been kind of paranormal.
That is,
other than that, my life's been pretty normal.
That is, you know, that is, what do you say? I mean, what the heck do you say to that? That's a ghost story, dude.
Were you scared?
I wasn't scared because it wasn't like a demon looking at me in my face. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was just kind of like uneasy. Like I kind of felt kind of like beside myself. Like, did I really just see that? Like, I felt like I was the only one, like, would people believe me since I was the only one, you know what I mean?
Right.
I kind of felt, kind of like out of place when it happened. But yeah, that was a very interesting, cause the thing is like, I keep running it back in my head. Was there people there? Cause I mean, there was no one cause everything was shut down for the night. So I couldn't. Really, and then driving through them with my headlights, you know, kind of, I don't know. It makes me feel weird talking about it.
that's understandable.
It's a very strange experience to see something like that, especially, you know, I know people talk about shadows and stuff like that, but to actually see something standing in front of you, and then disappear before your eyes, it makes you question almost everything, you know?
Heck yeah.
That was pretty.
That's intense. That's intense, dude. I mean, if that were me, I'd be scared. I would say, you know what? I was scared. Let me just put it this way. I would not be long in that job.
I got fired before my 90-day probation. I got in an accident. I was driving, spreading myself too thin, and I made a left at a light that didn't have a green arrow, and a lady just went right into the front of my car.
Oh, wow.
just tell them that you saw a ghost. I mean, you're not lying, yeah, man.
Exactly.
Saw a ghost.
Wow.
That's true. But actually, funny story about that job. There was, right before I got terminated from that job, we have fuel tanks on each of the plant properties. And there was an inside job they stole about 1,500 gallons of fuel from one of the plants. And then the next day, there's a guard during the day on Sundays that would patrol the area because there was nobody on site. And they caught another group of people stealing about 600 gallons of fuel from another in oil barrels. At one of our other plants. So,
man,
they had told me, because at the one plant that they stole, they have, I call them T-gates, but they're yellow pole gates that connect in the middle,
yeah,
so that way no one can drive through. But on the left side of it, there was a single one. And the property in the back was a ranch. We bought the land from the ranch, but they only had that one exit. So they had their own personal gate that they had to lock. And apparently that lock had been busted. So I didn't think anything of it that night when I went back there for my second round. because I went through the gate that we unlocked, not the property behind us. So they had gone there as soon as I left and stole the fuel and then drove off.
So so an inside job wasn't very good at staying on the inside.
Yeah, no,
How'd they get caught? I mean, was it security cameras?
Yes and no. The security cameras were not pointed at the gas pumps exactly. They did see a truck drive in. I don't know if you guys have seen, you guys probably haul them, those, you know, those plastic cubes that are very large that hold liquid inside.
Yeah, it's called tote.
Yeah.
Got that in stereo.
They had driven in with a truck, a flatbed, with a bunch of those on there, and they had pumped all of the fuel into those.
Wow.
So they had caught the truck that did it, but they had just, because what the other thing that happened was we were driving and we kept hearing clicks. We had a CB radio that we could communicate with. And we kept hearing clicks on the night no one was supposed to be there. And we kept hearing clicks, and he goes, "Was that you?" Or we'd hear a noise on there. "Was that you?" And they go, "No, it wasn't me." And we just thought it was just maybe interference or anything. But they were listening in on our conversations to which plants we were going to be going to.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they ended up, you know, coordinating when we weren't going to be there. So that was like the week before I got fired. So yeah, they had a lot of problems with that, especially, you know, with the copper wire and stuff. But, that was a pretty crazy experience for me.
It sounds like they didn't have any staff after they fired those guys and you.
The funny story is right when I got there, a guy, the other security guard, got fired because he was driving down a road that had no bumps or anything. It was a flat asphalt road. I guess he was reaching for his cheeseburger and flipped his car, and they tested him, and he had a THC in his system. So they fired him.
Oh, man.
He had the freaking munchies, and he was reaching for his In-N-Out burger. Yeah. That job, gave me a lot. I mean, early on, I was only 20. So that job gave me a lot of experience and stuff, you know. Even though it was only for 90 days, you know, it really opened my eyes to how, you know, cause my uncle actually works for that company. He's the top, I think he's the top third driver in that company.
Wow.
You know, he got me the job there, but I think one of the reasons I got in the accident was because I was stressed out, racking my brain on how they got in to steal the fuel. And I just wasn't really paying attention. And I just made that left.
Yeah. Man, you know, somebody else's sins got you. Jeez.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much. I'm paying for them.
Well, I guess that leads to distractive driving, so.
Yeah. one of the other, I forgot to tell you about one of the stories for the post office when I was working there about a tractor driver driving in to drop off. Dude, this guy, let me tell you something. I somehow don't know how these people get their Class A licenses here in California, especially when they can't drive for crap. These guys, they come in and everyone is the same. They come in, make this giant loop, and back into one of our spots. We only have two spots for trucks with the gate that goes down so they can load pallets and everything. And this guy, he came in, took out two of our yellow poles, hit one of our mirrors on our 7-ton truck, and it took him like 35 minutes to back in. And he comes out, he goes, "I'm sorry, I'll drive better." And I go, "What? What do you mean you're going to drive better?" He goes, "I got to call your boss." He goes, No, I'll drive better. I promise. And I go, "Dude, you just took out two of our poles and one of our mirrors on our trucks. We got to get this taken care of." Man, that guy, it was comical to watch him. Actually, I think I could probably get the video from it. We had a guy outside video recording this guy backing in because we heard we were all inside and we heard him hit that first pole, and that was loud. And when we went out there, he was all freaking sideways trying to back that thing in, and I was like, what is this guy doing? And he was like, he comes up to us, we got to call your boss. No, don't call my boss. I'll drive better. And I go, what do you mean, man? How many other offices have you destroyed?
Yeah.
How are they letting you drive?
How many cars did you take out making turns just getting just here?
Getting in?
Exactly. That was nuts. That guy, I don't know, man.
That's my.
We just all kind of sat there with our hands on our face like, what are we going to do? You know,
That's one of my favorite lines. I'll drive better.
I'd like to use that with the DOT. Yeah. Huh?
I'll drive better.
I'll drive better.
It reminds me of back in the day. There was an NBA player, Manute Bol. He played for the Sixers. He's like 7'7", real tall, skinny guy. Didn't speak real good English. He's from Africa, and you know, everybody knows the term "my bad," right? Everybody says "my bad." He's the one who coined that because he couldn't speak English real good. So every time he messed up on the court, he said to his teammates, "My bad, my bad, my bad." And that's like, instead of saying sorry and stuff or whatever, like, he was always saying "my bad." That's where the term "my bad" came from.
So it stuck.
So I imagine 20 years from now, everybody's going to say, "I'll drive better. I'll drive better. I'll drive better.
Don't call my boss. I'll drive better.
Yeah. No that's worries. Funny.
Those truck drivers are actually pretty cool, but man, I don't know. That guy had something else going on, man, for sure.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, he probably was new and didn't know what he was doing.
He was hanging out with that other security guard who flipped his car. Yeah. Had exactly. The THC in his, yeah.
Absolutely. That all makes sense now.
It does, doesn't it? It all comes together.
Yeah. He's like, he told me to turn the wheel really hard and it would work out just fine. So...
But it was the wrong way.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh man. So you used to build cranes and drive flatbeds, yeah?
Well, I have a couple of stories about the flatbread or the fat flatbread. Oh man, I got food in the brain.
Hungry.
I have a couple of stories about that. That was actually when I was 18. I worked for my mom's boyfriend at the time. It was a small crane company out here in Southern California. As far as I know, they're still in business to this day. They had a contract with one of these businesses. I don't know if you guys, what you guys call them out there, out here. It's like a Penske truck rental place where you can rent actual, you know, tractor trailers and everything like that. And they have flatbeds and they have moving trucks and all that.
Yeah.
But they needed me. He goes, hey, go pick up this. And I was 19 at the time. He goes, hey, go pick up this truck for me over here. And so I went with one of the guys and he took off. And I get inside and I go, hey, he needs me to, you know, pick up one of these trucks. And she goes, do you have your license? And I said, yeah. And she goes, you're 19. You gotta be 21. And you're getting a three axle truck, which means you need a class B. And I go, I don't have either of that.
I got my junior license.
I got my class C. That's about it, man. Like, and she goes, I'm sorry, we can't give you the truck. And so I called my boss and he goes, this guy owes me stuff. So I'm gonna call him. And he called him. And then 2 minutes later, she handed me the keys and I got that truck and I was driving that truck all around. It's hard because I know you guys aren't from the area. There's a place down here called Santa Fe Springs. It's more towards LA. And it's all industrial. So I had to go pick up parts and rails and beams for the cranes. We built cranes for warehouses. I don't know if you guys know. I mean, I'm sure you guys have seen them where they're like on pillars and rails and they have a hoist that moves across the warehouse to lift things.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely.
We built those. That's what we built. That was our thing. So I had to go pick up parts for that. And here I am, 19-year-old kid, never drove a straight truck in my life. Driving around downtown LA and everything, picking up stuff. Never had an issue.
What do they say? Experience is the best teacher, right?
I mean, and I picked it up pretty quickly. I mean, it wasn't hard for me to pick up. I mean,
what
a lot of people, like,
have?
Even driving mail trucks. I know. Even driving mail trucks, you know, people driving on the right side, you know, people have a really big time with that.
But
I can understand that, though. I've
always just liked to drive, you know? And so I didn't care what situation I was in. I just wanted to drive. So I was driving that all around, and then I did one run to... And this is how I never figured this out. How I never got stopped, I had to drive all the way to Phoenix from Pomona to Phoenix for a load test on a straight truck with no license. There and back. And I never got stopped.
Wow.
I never got stopped once. And I don't know how I made it. I just kept on going. At the time, I was so young, I didn't think that it was that big of a deal. But now, knowing, that would have been really bad. Had I got
For you and the company.
I would have been screwed.
Yeah.
That was a cool experience. But we got to work with this... one company, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of them, called Raytheon.
Yep. Definitely.
They're with radar and everything like that for intelligence and everything. And I got to go there for a couple load tests, which was cool. That we didn't need to take a straight truck. We just took a truck with a trailer for their load test. But that place is very, very interesting. I don't know if you guys have really looked into what they do and stuff, but they partner with fighter jets and making radar proof, like making them radar proof and everything like that, and and stuff. It's really, really interesting company, and they also do with space technology.
Wow!
So, you know, one time I was there, and they have this giant chamber that they put items in that is a test chamber. So they took all of the atmospheric pressure out of this chamber, and anything they put in there, it's supposed to stress test it. So for instance, they put this cabinet in there that they wanted to stress test for space, and when it got in there and it came out, it was a crumpled mess.
Wow.
it had just enclosed on itself.
That was
really, really cool. And the floor in this building was like an air hockey table. So they had this giant cylinder door that was like a round, it was just like a round cap. And once that floor was on and that door was unlocked, you could touch it with your finger and it would just float across the floor.
It was insane. I want one of those.
I mean, this door had to weigh.
Wouldn't that be cool? I mean, you could just flood, just slide right across the floor into the kitchen.
I think I'd get myself in trouble. Picking things around the house.
Heck yeah, that'd be awesome. Wow, that is so cool. That really is neat.
Yeah, and then this one time, we went back there, and I had to go into this. It was very strange. I don't know what it was. I had no idea. It was just a metal frame of sorts. But we had to load test it, and I got in there, and this guy that I was with, he said, okay, now you have to be quiet. And I go, what do you mean by that? He goes, once that red light's on, we can't talk about anything. So we got in there, and obviously I didn't know what it was. It was just like an exoskeleton of sorts of whatever it was, but it was top secret. We couldn't talk about it.
Wow.
UFO?
And of course, now I'm talking about it.
Yeah. There you go. Now we're all in trouble. Thanks a lot, Nick.
So yeah, Nick.
We're all sitting in jail.
Nick, tell me all about this UFO you were in.
Oh, man. Dude, I don't know what it was. It was just this space aluminum frame of sorts. And it was large, but I couldn't step back and look at it and say, okay, oh, that's what it is. It was just very, very strange looking. Mm-hmm. And it was only tested, I think, at like 1,200 pounds. So we had to test the actual frame itself. And it was just very, very, very strange. I don't know. But we were in there for about 3 minutes, set it down, walked out, and that was it. We didn't need to know. I mean, we got to know what we needed to know, nothing more. You know? And
Would you be able to draw a picture of it and send it to me?
I could. But to give you an idea, just before I draw, I could draw it to the best of my memory. But to give you an idea, it was like kind of like a circus tent,
but it didn't have the the canvas over it. It was the like the skeleton of a circus tent, just the frame.
Huh. That was
it came to a point at the top.
That was definitely a UFO. I'm telling you straight up. It was the top part of a UFO, and they didn't put the sheet metal on yet.
Let me just put it to you this way. You've been doing that to the show for far too long.
Dude, I'm going to have the FBI knocking on my door.
Exactly.
Nick, you know, don't worry, Nick. The moment you confirmed the fact you were going to interview with me, you had the FBI on your radar.
Absolutely.
I promise you, they know who Merkel is.
Well, look. If two guys in black show up at your front door, just call us the next day and just say, hey, they showed up.
And I'll tell you, they're here.
Yeah.
Hey, they're here.
And then put them on.
Yeah, and then I'll say, I told you they'd be there.
Oh, my word.
Do you guys have anything to say to them?
Oh, I'd have lots to say. I'll give them my address.
Yeah, no, that was really, really interesting. I mean, I didn't know what it was,
right.
But they wouldn't let us know. They just told us, once that light's flashing, you guys can't talk about what's going on in here.
Wow.
Or what we do. So, I mean, they didn't even do anything, though. Mm-hmm. It was just like an exoskeleton of sorts. But it was made out of aluminum, as far as I could tell. But another cool thing I got to do was, are you guys aware of the Virgin brand of space, and they have airplanes, too?
Yeah, yeah.
They up in Palmdale, or actually California City, which is up, it's about a 2.5 hour drive north of me. They had, I forget what year it was in. It was probably 2015, maybe 2013. They had built, it's really interesting to see too. It looks like two airplanes side by side, but in the middle is where they have their spacecraft. And on either side of the airplanes is they each have one wing apiece. So it's like a double aircraft together, but they have wings that makes it look like one large airplane with two planes stuck together.
Okay.
And they had a launch in 2013 and it failed. And it exploded and they were rebuilding for launch two. So I actually got to go inside of their actual hangar out there in California City. And I got to see the whole thing. I got to see the actual ship itself being rebuilt and everything. And we actually were there to troubleshoot problems with the hoist that we had put up. And that was really, really interesting too. A lot of people don't realize where, you know, different jobs can, you know, land you places where you'd never thought, you know,
yes.
You never thought I never in my wildest dreams would have thought I would have seen something top secret working for a crane company at 19 years old.
Right.
You know,
that's crazy.
But you know, that was really interesting. But yeah, those are pretty much my stories, man. I mean, I have stories from my dad and stuff, but, you know, about funny names people have.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a crazy job to have. I mean, all of my jobs have been crazy. I always have stories from all my jobs, but the post office for sure, man, is one of the most interesting jobs. I don't think I'm ever going to get bored at this job. Every day is something new. Every day is something new.
That's the beauty, you know, of it, is that every day is a new adventure.
Exactly. And it always keeps you interested. It never ceases to amaze you.
Yeah. But you know what? There's two kinds of people in this world. People who work a job. And they go in, they do their job, they punch in, they punch out, and go home and don't pay attention to anything going on. And then there's people like you. You go into your job and you're paying attention and things, you know, the crazy stuff catches your eye. And so it keeps it interesting. Otherwise, it just becomes monotonous.
Let me tell you, I'm the kind of guy, like, I the territory I drive, there's another trailer guy and a straight truck guy doing the same area. Trailer guy starts 2 hours before me. And about 2 weeks ago, he's like, man, I saw you like three times today. I said, you did? Like
people paying attention, yeah. And people not.
Yeah, I'm just like I'm like, oh, and he's like, you waved at me. I'm like, I did.
And meanwhile, you're just scratching your beard or something. Yeah, you know?
No, I probably did. I'm on autopilot. When I see an LTO carrier, I give him the wave, you know, the courtesy wave, and I keep carrying on.
I don't wave to anybody.
Yeah, it's because you're a jerk.
Well, you probably don't see anyone since you're driving.
Exactly. There you go. I figured if I waved at every truck driver I saw, I'd be waving constantly. So I don't wave to anybody. Yeah. You know, I don't want to hate anybody. So I don't. I just don't acknowledge anybody.
Well, that's cool.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, Dad, what can they do?
They can share the show. Share it on Facebook. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. Share it with a friend. Share it with their loved ones. Share the show.
Just share the freaking show. If you enjoy the show, we enjoy making the show. Share the show with people that you enjoy in your life so you can all just have joy together. And before we get out of here this week, I want to let you know that the outro song was sent to us by a listener named Lee. Her boyfriend just started up his band called the Clay Clear Band, and this song is called Cimarron, right?
It is correct.
All right, let's get to it. Or away from it. Just bye, guys.
We crossed the Red River before the sunrise, with a bottle of courage and two tired eyes, with nothing to spend but the time we had earned, and nothing to gain but the lessons we learned. Just miles behind us was the past we had left. In front were the things that we hadn't found yet. The Lord put me here on this earth just to roam, with my seat as my pillow and the highway my home. Through wide open spaces full of sun-baked sand, like a long black snake winding across the land. Over mountains and canyons I've made my claim. I'm crossing the rivers where I earned my name. My thousand horse carriage, it pulls me along, with the tires a humming my favorite song. When the Lord calls me back to his home on the fields, I'll pull into heaven upon eight.
Well, that's the show, everybody. We really hope you enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, Dad, what can they do?
They can share the show. Share it on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. We're on all of those. Share it with a friend. Share it with a loved one. Share it with family. Share the show.
Just share the show. If you enjoy the show, we enjoy making the show. We highly encourage you to share the show with other people you enjoy so you can all enjoy the show together. That's what we're here for, right?
That's right. We're number one in Guatemala.
We are. That's right. We are number one in Guatemala.
You're not going to put that in there.
That's like...
We have all three listeners down there.
That's like all three listeners. Oh, man.
All three people have cell phones.
We're on the rise, friends. Shooting for the stars. Guatemala.
Guatemala.
Let's do it.
All right, we should bring that back.
No, that's
good. You can't leave that in. It's like,
why not?
Like we're making fun of Guatemala.
Who cares? It's three listeners.
We don't know that.
And trust me, Dad, I know that. It's three listeners.
I'm gonna tell Jack to edit that part out.
No. This is gold. This is gold. Okay. Before we get out of today's show, though, how you ruined my vibe, man.
I ruined the vibe.
Like, literally, she just texted me like 30 minutes ago saying, my son's missing, and I just remembered now.
Oh, there you go. Like, that's helpful.
Like she said that she's putting Gemma down, and she has no idea where Ben went.
Hmm.
I should probably go look for him.
I probably should.